This is the 2nd of November, 1980, Taos, New Mexico, and we're having a session with Bartholomew. Good morning, Bartholomew.
Good morning.
We would like to begin with picking up on a theme that was discussed at the last Socorro meeting, and alas, that side of the tape did not record. And the question had to do with free will, and in your response, you discussed an analogy using a prism, light through a prism.
Yes. As I recall, the question strand went such as this. On the one hand, people told the young lady that asked the question that she was completely responsible for the activities of her life, on the one hand. And then other people say to her, no, don't worry, everything is God's will. And everything that happens is what God wants to happen. Now, her question was, which is true? Are both true? Are neither true? Is it sometimes one? Is it sometimes the other? What exactly is the answer? I attempted to answer by asking her to hold in mind the thought of what you call a prism. Light goes through the prism, and as it extends out of the prism, it goes into many bands. Now, the number of colored bands that come out of that prism, although you have not yet discovered it with your human eye or even with your machines, but they are a great many bands come out of those prisms. When you are acting from the understanding of seeing yourself as one of those bands of light, you take this band of light, let us say it's red. You see yourself as an individualized, separated band of light. You take that light and you play with it. You create your world of light out of that color. Your individual stamp is on everything that you do. You take it and you create with it. It is power. It is light. And you create with it. Now you make anger. Now you make acceptance. Now you make jobs. Now you make children. Now you make love. Now you make whatever. You make. You take it. And you play with it. You use your own power to make that. The only place that I have quarrel with humanity is when they make their own form out of that red light and say, God, you made this. Now, what is the truth? Is there God present? If you look carefully at any kind of prismatic work, you're going to see around and surrounding it the vast white light of the prism itself. There's going to be light there. There is always surrounding, uplifting, and upholding the white light. It's always there. But your attention now is on the brighter, more, what is the current term, flashiness. Do you understand? The flashiness of the red, all right? Now, it isn't that simple. Because if everything you made was red, you would become bored, wouldn't you? If everything you saw was the same, over and over and over, the sameness of things, it would become boredom setting in much sooner. So it isn't quite that simple. You have created a fascinating game. Understand this. The game is endlessly fascinating because right next to the red is what color? Let us say orange. Now, your red reflects and becomes involved in all of the forms that orange is making on one side of you. It is also involved in all of the forms that the color on your left is making. So all of these are moving around, and you have all of these structures. And each one of you are able to look down the whole spectrum to your right and to your left and see vast numbers of other possibilities. And way down will be green. And here you are in the red and you'll think, ah, look, way down there, there's purple. I'm going down there. That's what I want. I want the purple. You know, the green isn't really what I have in mind. I think it looks much more exciting. I can just see dimly down the spectrum at those purple forms. And that's what I'd like. Whatever it might be, spiritual awakening, whatever, down there, purple. If you're a materialist, a Porsche. Whatever it might be, something wonderful. That is not to intimate that you are. I simply wanted to have a little fun. Down the line, whatever it might be, a form that you could create. So, as you understand, you're going to get a feeling of responsibility. You take the colors and you paint the picture. If the picture is pleasing, then you give it no thought. You say, oh, good. I'm so glad. If the picture becomes displeasing, which it will have to be eventually because, well, I'll go into that in a moment. If it becomes displeasing, then you start to get anxious. Now you want to know who's created this mess. As long as it's beautiful and wonderful, you will take full credit and have no problem with that. But if it starts to get murky, if all of the colors move together and black is the resulting color, which often is when you mix many colors together, black is the outcome, then you become upset. Am I really responsible? No, I'm sure I could not be responsible for this. It must be someone else. If those around you refuse to take responsibility, then there's only one alternative, and that's God. So let's blame him. He can't say yes or no. Do you understand? What you try to do is, as you become more and more convinced that what is being created under in your very world is not pleasing, you cannot accept the fact that this is something that you have jointly created. Because you see, the problem is that you have not jointly, I mean, you have not separately created, you have jointly done so. And you do not see your own blending of your own orange or red into the picture. Do you understand? You will say, oh yes, I feel responsible for that left section of the palette. Yes, I can see how I would have done that. But all of the rest of this, no. The fact is that it is a combined effort. All of those colors together, interplay, if you could see them, where the analogy breaks down, is that it isn't some kind of rigid, non-moving blending of those bands of color. If you could really see what ego movement is, you will see never ceasing and eddies in and out and around about, intermingling, intermeshing, so forth, painting a very elaborate light picture, if you could see it. This is what takes place. Now, when you talk about free will, that is what you're talking about. You're talking about being given the power to create. And when you create, being responsible for that which you have created. And when you move out of your limited observation of yourself, meaning your senses, meaning your emotions, meaning your mind, when you create out of those three things, you are still creating, but this time you are creating a picture that will not last, but will certainly affect you. On that level, you are responsible. And the reason that I ask you not to dismay is the knowledge that although it is a temporary happening that you are creating this, when you awaken to the understanding, however dim, that there is another way to create, there is another force, another source to go to for the power of creation. When you finally come to that point, which is all you have done, is to realize that there's another force that you can talk about. There's another power that you can rely on. When you've gotten to that point, then you have begun, just begun, to move along the path of understanding. But you still have to come to the point where you have surrendered to that power, and then, I've said before, at that point the power takes you up. You are no longer, if you wish to speak in karmic terms, you are no longer karmically collecting any residue whatsoever, because now the power the vast power of the crystal itself. What is it you call them? The prism itself. The prism itself is now generating the power. Do you understand the difference? It's just simply a matter of how far up, back to the source, are you going. If you go all the way back up, then you see from that perception, you don't see your own little band and only those surrounding you. You see the entirety. You see the power of that white light that comes thundering down into that prism. You feel that white light with a total power instead of its tiny little driblet of red power as it comes down through the isolated prism. And when you are aware of the vastness of the prism and its the play, you still see the lights going out. Don't you understand? You still see it. You still understand it. But now it's with a vast understanding. You see your own little drama, and you see the drama of all those around you. You understand all of it. And compassion fills you because now you understand so much more. To say that you understand everything is nonsense. But you understand so much more. And it puts you in the position of knowing that if the prism simply rests, the light will force its way beautifully through and play out its drama. You have just removed your identification. You are still, please understand this, you are still acting in that red band, unless you have died. If you've died, then there's no focus for the light, the body is gone, consciousness expands, and all other things take place. But as long as you are in body form, you are going to be carrying out the drama of your own individual life. It will be, and you, as the prism, are going to observe it. But at the same time, you can observe your own, and please understand this, and I think this keys into a question you perhaps are going to ask, from that point of perception, follow me if you can, you see your own past lives, as well as the past lives of others, as well as the future possibilities of those red bands. Do you understand me? It is only from that lofty a source that you are able to view all of the myriad past and future and present choices that are going on within your life. So when the Maharshi says to you, go home, go back the way you came, in our analogy, it simply means moving back up the band of red light through intensive self-awareness, back into the resource. But I must tell you this, when you have reached the crystal, the prism, it is from that point that you learn something. The prism does not generate the light. The prism only receives the light. And it is the same light going through the prism that enlivens the prism and also enlivens the individual strands. Do you understand? It is the same light. And it is only from the perception of that one vast source of the prism itself that you can understand that light moves through everything, and your job is simply, if you wish to speak in spiritual terms, to stand in grateful awe, because that is the point where you see clearly that light enters, that light plays all things. So from one point of view, it is true to say that God, or the one light, is that red light. Yes, no question about it. If the divine force were to somehow, and one cannot imagine how this would happen, but should decide to withdraw its light, that all forms would become deadened and nothing would enliven them. Yes. Impossible. Totally impossible. But were that to ever happen, that is what would be observed. So both are true. You see, this is the paradox of talking about free will. On the one hand, it is true that it is the power of the divine that enlivens that particular band of red. But it is also true that when you are embodying that band of red, you make the form. You use, what is it, this wonderful commodity, neon lights, bands of light, all right? They go endlessly, and then man or someone bends them into certain shape and form and creates word or form or idea or whatever. Do you understand? This is the kind of idea I'd like to... You are responsible for how you take hold of it and the way that you shape it and the form you give to it. Whether it is something beautiful to behold or something destructive to behold. And others looking upon that same band are going to respond to it. What you must remember running right along with this entire idea is that those forms that you make have the power within them to attract or repel other people. They will either draw people to you or they will repel them. They will influence each other. Do you see, the forms that you make, since you do not know their empty form, since you do not yet know that the form isn't the important thing, but the quality of the light that permeates it, which is the important thing, until you know that, you're going to be repelled or attracted by other people's forms. The forms that their minds make, you like their ideas, you don't. You like the way they look, you don't like the way they look. You like what they say, you don't like what they say. All of it. And it's only because, you see, you have been, what might I use as the word? You have been conditioned to believe that those forms have the power to hurt you or to make things better for you or to give you pleasure. Or to give you pain. You have been conditioned to believe this. And I ask you, as I have asked you every time we've met, in one way or another, I've asked you to consider the possibility that the form is not to be feared. That the form is not to be attractive. That what is to be feared or attractive is simply the first layer of response of your emotional conditioning and the conditioning of your mind. And if you will just hold in your mind the great doubt, the doubt that says this is just a form that has been twisted here for a momentary freezing in time, like this, nothing more. And if I will be still and watch, it will change before my eyes. And if you would only watch, you would see, they do change just like that. Watch carefully and what you will see is change. Watch people's response. They say something angry to you. Watch. Watch with compassionate heart. Watch. What is the next thing that happens? And then the next, and then the next. And if one can only learn that there is nothing within the form, I mean either verbal or material or mental, that can really hurt you, that can really have any lasting effect on you. If you will see that and feel that and know that, then you can allow things to come and go with compassionate acceptance. Compassionate acceptance. It is easy to be stoically and superior in your acceptance. And I think it is far worse to be that way than to be hurt. Do you understand my difference? If you have decided to be above it, all, meaning that you are not going to involve yourself in the lowly problems of mankind, such as pain, fear, suffering, anxiety, remorse, guilt. If you are above that, then what you're going to do is build a wall around you of encrusted protection, and no one can get through. And that's all right. You might be safe, but you aren't going to get any love either. Because behind that wall, nothing can permeate. Not the pain, but not the love. And eventually, I have said again and again, eventually, in order to really know, you must become vulnerable. And in the human sense, to be vulnerable is a negative attribute. But I would like to tell you that none of the greats have ever received the deepest understanding without being absolutely vulnerable. But as you're being vulnerable, as you are saying, yes, all right, I will listen. I will participate in your life with you. I will not leave you alone, isolated out there. I will participate in whatever way I can. Here I am. Here I am. The more you can do this, the more you're going to learn the underlying lesson, which is you have absolutely nothing to fear from each other. Nothing. It may appear that you do. And your first response may be fearful. But if you can only hold, not putting up the walls, not putting up the defenses, but just being absolutely vulnerable, then watch. Don't lose your watch stance. Do you understand? It's the stance of the watcher that will free you. If you leave the watcher and jump into the emotions, you're lost. Yes, I agree. Now you're lost. Now you're out there with them. And they speak, and you defend, and you cry, or you moan, or you yell, or you scream, or you withdraw, whatever is your particular way. You will find a way. But that's because you are now awash in the same eddies of emotion. But if you can stand back as the watcher and compassionately, I repeat again, compassionately observe and see a part of your being participating and wondering and trying to uphold and uplift, you're going to get a different feeling. You're going to come to know that you are not vulnerable at all. You can never know that you are not vulnerable in the hands of the forms of the world until you have tried it. You will never know if you are a mountain climber or not until you climb a mountain. You cannot know. You can imagine in your mind for years and never know, and never have the wonder of knowing exactly what you are. Well, so it is this way. You will never know that you are totally safe, totally secure, totally capable of being absolutely safe, peaceful, alive, extending, joyful, positive rather than negative. You never know any of these things until you get in there and try. If you want to know how to help other people, there's only one real way. And that is to have enough compassion in you to be vulnerable. And what does that mean? That means allowing them to be whatever they wish, to take that strand of their energies and make whatever forms they want, and to, with compassionate understanding, watch it, and watch it carefully, participate in whatever way is spontaneously correct in the moment, and then allow that view to slip away when they make another form out of their light field. It is only through being absolutely willing to let all of those forms take whatever shape that you will begin to free the other person. And let me tell you why. One of the reasons that people make ugly forms out of their light field is in the mistaken understanding that if you make your form ugly enough, that other people will do what you want. Or if you make it self-pitying enough, that people will take care of you. Or if you make it sexual enough, people will adore you. And it is true, it works for a while. But eventually people say, there must be something more than this. There must be something more. And either they will stay with that one form and permeate deeper and deeper until they find the light source, or they will say, fine, I'll go get another one. This one's orange, I'll try green. This one's blue, I'll try orange. Do you understand? Eventually, with some human being, you have to take your stand. And watch so carefully, so deeply, not with a detached eye of a reptile waiting to eat its prey, but with, do you understand that kind of watching? That's not the kind of watching I have in mind. That is one kind, which only makes the other person feel cold and alone and isolated, empty, and terribly vulnerable. But the other kind of watching, with eyes that run with tears sometimes, with arms that are out to support no matter what the activity. A constant flooding out of compassionate understanding that you share a common misconception, and you do. Please do not any of you ever place yourself above anyone else, because you all share the same common misconception. It's even in the passive sense, no resistance. In the active sense, abundant participation. You see, when my fear, and I use that word carefully, my fear when I speak to people about observation and watching is that many fall into a stance of isolated, almost arrogant, superior looking down. Do you see, this is the problem. And this is not what the observer does. If you have ever witnessed yourself as observer, you understand something. You are so aware of your own limitations that those are what you see first. If you as observer cannot see your own limitations but only see those of others, then you're not being the observer, you're being the ego watcher. That's very different. Because the observer, the hallmark of observer, is you see your own construction first. Because that's what you see out of first. You see, the observer is within. And the first level that the observer sees is your own ego structure, your own beliefs, all of that, your own manipulative tendencies. That's what you see first. And then through that, you see the other. But the first line of observation is yourself, and this is why you get free. If you did not run into yourself first, you could endlessly go through all of the worlds judging others with arrogance. But you can't do it, because as watcher, the first thing you run into is yourself. And this is why it is well said, you must know yourself first before you can know others. And it's simple. If you're being watcher, you cannot avoid it. Compassion. Compassion. You are all in this together. If you cannot, for any other reason, generate up compassion for anyone else, it should be on this one point. You are equally blind. There is nothing to be said about gradating states of blindness. You either see or you do not see. You either know or you do not know. The only difference is some of you are more vulnerable than others. Some of you have said to a greater extent than others, all right, let it happen. I will let go. I will just let go my hands. But inside you're still afraid. Inside there's still anxiety. And those of you in this room, have you not done some of that already? Not one of you, by choice, would be here today unless you had let go. You've let go many different things. Some of you have let go living in a place that you care a lot about. Others of you have let go material gain. Others of you have let go security, financial security. Others of you have let go friendships and old familiar surroundings. Others of you have let go prestigious futures. So you've let go somewhat. Are you afraid inside? Is there fear here? Of course there's fear. So you've done the hardest part, which is the beginning move of letting go, opening the hand somewhat, you know, and the rope now slides a little more easily in your palm. Doesn't have that same terrifying grip. But still, what remains? Totally open-handed. Totally open-handed. So that the threads of life move without friction through the palms of your existence. It's a wonderful feeling, my friends. I recommend it. But in order to let go, you must consciously, actively, compassionately view each other as brothers and sisters of equal pain. And when a brother or a sister pains you, please, instead of your first response being, "How can I defend?" let it be, "I understand." Whether you understand the absolute specific activity or not is irrelevant. Take it one step behind, please, and understand that fearful apparitions are made out of the light body through fear. And fear you can all understand. Fear is the common commodity that we are talking about. If any one of you in this room has no fear ever, then you have no business sitting and wasting your time in this room. If you are free of fear, then you are totally vulnerable and there's nothing more to be said. The common ground is fear. And knowing your own fear and the terrible way that fear can grasp your mind and twist it and turn it and make even more hideous apparitions, the response must be compassion. It must be. Because this is where you meet each other. Other questions?
I have one. If the red light and the blue light and orange light are manifestations of divine light, since these are all contained, these vibrations or frequencies are all contained in the white light, then it seems to me that as far as the ego is concerned, there are only two possibilities. Either there is no ego in the red light and the blue light and so forth, or the ego is divine.
Everything that is ever created carries with it the divine essence. There's no doubt about that. And this is where the confusion comes in people's understanding. A great saint will get to a certain level of understanding and say, God creates everything. And then the Hitlers of the world come along and go through their paces, and the world responds and says, that is the divine in action. If so, I want no part of it. How can the divine possibly give its power to such atrocious apparitions? How can it be so? And the reason that it's confusing is that both are true. To say that the ego is divine is to say this, my friend, that the substance, the basic substance that the specialized ego is now manipulating in its own way is divine, that is true. But to say that all of the forms, you see, the reason I keep saying that the ego is illusory is those forms that you create out of this light band, they cannot stand, they cannot hold, they are not eternal, they fade. They must fade. They're moving. And as they move, they change. Everything is constantly in change, in flux. It is never the same. So to say that any of those forms that you have created are divine is to say no, that while you have made it appear to others is not divine propulsion, but the essence, the substance that you have used is divine. It's very difficult for me to make this clear. Is that any clearer at all to you?
I'm still confused.
I'm not sure I can help you. You see, you say to me that the ego is real. I say to you, the ego is not real. And the reason that the ego is not real is you see the ego as something that continues on and on, relentlessly marching through time. And I say, your observation is incorrect. If you were really seeing, it flashes on and off. And as it reappears in the flash, it is not the same as when it went off. Understand, you're talking about moving light. That is what you are, and that's what you're talking about. And when you start talking about solidified matter, then we get confused, because you think that this is very, very solid. And of course, you know in your mind it isn't. But you react to it, you respond to each other as if you were solid. You respond to those apparitions of mind, of fear, that you make up in your mind. You act as if they're real. I tell you, they're not real. How can they be real? If this is not real as table, how can you possibly extrapolate and say that the words that come out of your mouth are real? Don't you see the abstractive difficulty? If this is not real as it seems, then on this other level of speech, of action, how can you say that those are real? They are ephemeral. They are absolutely ephemeral. They have a flash and then they die. They have a flash and then they die. And when the flash comes on again, it is not the same flash that died the instant before. It is constantly changing. But you do not see that. You have structured your apparatus, your physical apparatus, that you would not see it. You don't want to see it. That's why you are in the fix that you're in. And I'm asking you to give serious question to the fact that you are as substantial as you think, that your ideas are as real as you think, that your responses are as real as they are. They are momentary, they come and they go, and they're ever-changing. If you were watching your own responses, you would know this, but you're not. You're watching other people's responses. The problem is that you project out continuity because you do not want to face chaos. I repeat, you project out continuity to each other because you do not want to face chaos. If you could really see what was happening, you would see chaos continually. Because if you could see change happening so instantly, what would this do to your belief of yourself? If you could see the reality of the changes constantly taking place in your own mind, in your own body, in your own emotions, in your own environment, everything, if you could really see the change that is constantly going on, where could you grasp? You could not grasp. This is why freedom is difficult, because one of the stages right before freedom is seeing everything is changing. Nothing to hang on to, nothing. There is no hand out there to hang on to. And this is where the fear comes in. What you're saying is you'd like to change those things that you don't like, and you'd like to make solid those things that you do like. That is not the way the game can be played. Everything changes. What you have as pleasure today is gone from you tomorrow. What you have as pain today is gone from you tomorrow. You say, good, let the pain go, but let's keep that pleasure going. Let's not get too serious about this change business. Let's make sure we keep a lot of substantial continuation going, because you don't want chaos. The truth of the matter is, your mind could not face it. Your mind could not face the chaos. And so your mind scrambles like a crab upon a rock as it sees the waves coming and going and taking its foothold off again and yet again. And thus it is that the mind and the ego combination continually scramble for foothold on that rock. Terrified of the day when the wave is so strong that the crab can no longer keep its foothold. And that is precisely what faces you. And then you are awash in the sea, and there is no foothold possible. And that is what you fear. And that is why you continually look at the continuity and not at the chaotic change. You are afraid of disintegration. My friends, it's a joke, because you are not integrated now. It is a joke. You are not integrated now. You are not a continuum now. You are flickering on and off and on and off. Those of you who have seen aura, do you see something pervading, steady, never changing? Nonsense. If so, you're seeing the wrong thing. It's constantly moving, changing, everything. When you, those of you who have perceived past that into the abundant light, what do you see? Is it all quiet? Everything the same? Nonsense. Abundant movement. Wondrous movement. Delightfully ecstatic, enchanting movement. I use the word deliberately, enchanting movement, because it is enchanting. What is death
is stillness, frigidity, form, concretized, immobile. That is frightening. And yet, again and again, you cry out for concretizing yourselves and those around you. I mean, let's make sure everybody stays in just their places. I mean, we have it all figured out now. We know that you're a nurse. We know what all of you are. Now, let's not start messing things up. Let's not start changing. Or if you do, don't change too much. Nonsense. Those are simply labels that one sticks on surrounding form in order to make you feel more at ease. You're fooling yourselves, my friend. You aren't what you seem to be. I'm not at all sure that I've come any closer to answering your question. I simply say that if you stand very sure as the watcher, you are going to see that there arises a way of using divine power to create certain images, either mental or physical or material, whatever you wish to say, emotional, and that pulsating through that form constantly is the divine essence. But the form that it is made into, like the band of light that can be made to form a dirty word or a beautiful word, who chooses to form that light into that word? You do. Don't blame God if you write a dirty word. It was you who chose to form it thus. But the joke is that it isn't the word that matters. Don't you understand? The word is irrelevant. Your acts are irrelevant. What is relevant? This is why I say, if you wish to help others, you will hold steady in your observation with compassion. Because if you stay long enough, that's all right, my friends, no problem. If you stay long enough in that observation of them, you are going to begin to sense what stands behind the word. You're going to sense the band of light that has made up that. You're going to sense it. But if you keep identifying with the word, the form, that this neon light has made, you've lost it. It's got to come from a step deeper within your being. So you see, the tools are all there. Compassionate acceptance. And all the time realizing your own oneness with those words, because you have made words of your own constantly. And some of those words are loving, and some of those words are terribly, terribly frightening. No one in this room, no one listening to these tapes can stand outside of that statement. So be compassionate one to the other. Those words can frighten, or they can heal. It is your choice. But neither one of those are real. Either your wonderful words or your terrifying words. But the light with which you have made them is very real.
One more question on this. Who is it who is manipulating the light bands? If there's a red light and the red light is forming dirty words or
all right,
uplifting
all
words,
right,
who's
all
forming
right,
those words?
All right. Now look. We've talked before about the movement upon the wheel that goes around and around and of its own momentum continues to go around and around. Now, it is not a question of who, my friend. It is a question of what. The real question is not who are you, but what are you? Because when you find out, it isn't a who at all. It is a what. I sound like one of those children's books, don't I? But in any case, it is important to know within yourself that the manipulation of the energy field of the red spectrum, I'll just say, is a power that began gently, quietly, almost timidly in the deep recesses of time, but over the eons has become stronger and stronger and stronger. And so when you begin your trip back to the source, the thing that you run into is the momentum of that power that has been going on for so many lifetimes. And this is why the Indians, the Hindu Indians, that is, the East Indians, say, so few make it. Not because it is impossible to do, but once you move and try to move against the stream of all of those incarnations, you run into an energy force. What is really moving that, my friend, is habit, is tendencies. There is no person there. Please excuse me for destroying your grand illusion, but there is no Miss Ganowski there. There are tendencies. There are tendencies only. You string them together and you say, I am there. But they are only tendencies. And this is why karma comes into it. What is karma really, except one tendency outcropping out of another tendency, out of another? Repetitious, habitual, patterned tendency with predictability. If you do A, B will result. Why? Because born within A is the tendency for B, and then C and so forth. Down the line it goes. There isn't anyone in there. And you know it. There isn't any one in there. There isn't any one in there. There isn't any one in there. The illusion is there is a person in there, a persona, an entity, a spook. There isn't anyone in there. There is the one in there. But that isn't a one. It is tendencies relentlessly churning onward. The conglomerate of which you call yourself. It isn't real. Get on to that and you'll break it all up. There isn't anyone home. And aren't you glad? Because if there's no one there, then you have to kill no one to be free. And don't underestimate that idea. Most of you think that in order to submerge in the divine, that you have to die. And your language says it. You have to die to the self, you say. The minute you entertain that word death, fear crops up. I tell you, be good Buddhists. Don't worry about life, death. Don't worry about person. Just watch. And if you watch deeply enough, you're going to find out that nobody's home. And if nobody's there, then you don't have to kill anything. You don't have to destroy anything. You don't have to go through the anguish of death, which is what you're afraid of. Die to the self? What is all that about? That's a wonderful statement. What does that mean? It sounds frightening to me. Die to the self. Those words create tremendous fear in the minds of men. The truth is, if you watch quietly enough, you're going to see nobody's home. And if nobody's home, then nothing has to die. Then things can simply go on. And the observer simply watches. Is the observer a person? No. Those of you who have even come close to the hem of the watcher know that the watcher is not a person. It is not a person. Did you have a question?
Then, being spontaneous in your everyday experience is really working from a truer source.
You can work from spontaneity and have a very enlivened and abundant life. But be careful, because one of the greatest tendencies in the band is to pretend to be spontaneous while all you're doing is acting out your deeper ego manifestations and calling it spontaneous living. A good test of spontaneity is the results that it has on those around you. If you are being spontaneous and everyone around you is hurting because of your spontaneity, I would ask you to question whether it comes from your spontaneous divine extension source or whether it simply comes from your ego that has been dying to indulge itself but has had to make an excuse to step aside all the limited boundaries of social organization. So watch carefully. But it is true that living a spontaneous life is a wondrously opening experience. Those of you who are really close to each other, not just pretend to be, but are really close to each other, you can help each other a great deal in this one way of allowing the partner to act out their spontaneous fantasies, whatever they might be, without any restrictions, allowing them to learn the difference. Because you see, until you have learned the difference within yourself of acting out your ego extensions or acting out of divine spontaneity, you're not going to know the difference. This is why I say those of you that are really close. Because if you're not really close, then you are going to have around each other so many rules and regulations of how you should act and so forth that you have just paralyzed activity. You paralyze each other. You call it love. I call it paralysis. Don't do this. Don't do that. You can't do this. You can't do that. You must do this. You must do that. Surrounded by shouldn'ts and shoulds. Terrifying. You call it love? Nonsense. Nonsense. What kind of an expression of love is that that says you cannot do this? You must not do that. If you do this, this will hurt me. If you do that, that will hurt me. If you look at all the things that you have surrounded each other with, you have the things that you can and cannot do because you're going to hurt or not hurt each other, how can you move? Why can we even think about spontaneous living? And those of you that don't have a lot of close friends, how many of those restrictions have you put upon yourself? I cannot be spontaneous in this because it will present a view of myself that will make me sick. I can't think of myself as spontaneous in that way. I mean, my goodness, I have a position to uphold. The position of myself. See what a good person I am. See what a wonderful, helpful, divinely wonderful person I am. And a divine person would never act like that. So you spontaneously stop yourself constantly because you just don't want to introduce the possibility that you too might participate in the silly fantasies of mankind. Well, you're fooling yourselves, my friends. You're fooling yourselves. You've constricted, restricted each other to such an extent that true spontaneous living is a rare commodity. And when you begin acting spontaneously, let me assure you that most people will start saying, what a strange bird. What a strange bird. What a strange bird. Undependable. Undependable. Please understand that one word. It controls your life. Undependable. The one thing that you can say of a virtue on the earth plane is, when you finally get laid down in your tomb, they will write over it, but he or she was dependable. That means that they can be counted on to do the same thing on Monday that they do on Friday, to respond to you the same on Monday as on Friday, as this year, as next year, and on down the line. They were dependable. What a terrifying statement. Does that mean I am against dependability? I am not against anything. I am for something. I am for spontaneous movement. And sometimes spontaneous movement may appear to be totally undependable. And people do not like that. Because, I repeat, you do not want to indulge in the thought of chaos. And if everyone stopped being dependable, chaos would ensue. There's no doubt about it. And I would tell you, quite frankly, it would be an extremely interesting time. And one of the reasons that freedom is possible during times of worldly chaos is because nothing is dependable anymore. Nothing is dependable anymore. And so you now have an excuse. God knows why you have to wait for an excuse. But now you have an excuse to also act new, spontaneously, creatively, rather than habitually. If the world gets to be, why in the times of war, in the Second World War, for example, constantly you run into this phenomenon of people loving the war in England. Why? Because they love death and destruction? No. Because all the old broke down and new forms were being created every moment in time. New ways of living, new ways of responding, new activities, new extensions, new movement. The old had died. The new was forming. And they knew well that it was only a certain length of time, and then they would have to fall back into their old forms again. But for a time, there was the happenstance of allowing the new. You're afraid. You're afraid. If you start acting spontaneously, schools will close, hospitals will close, doctors' offices will close. You're afraid. There's nothing to be afraid of. So what if hospitals close? If schools close, so what? Is that such a big problem? You're afraid. And you're afraid because you do not believe. You do not have that ingrown knowledge that all is well. You say it. God's in his heaven. All's right with the world. Do you believe it? Nonsense. If you really took God seriously, you'd probably be terrified. You don't believe it. This is why I say the only answer is not to pretend in your mind that you believe, but to get into your, to say, I don't think I believe. I mean, I'd like to believe. I wish I believed. It would be wonderful to believe. I don't believe. And forget a belief. I don't want your belief. I want your experience. This is why I say all else is of no value except your experience. And how does it come about that you experience your divine, continuously dependable essence? You don't need dependability in action, word, thought. You do not need dependability on that level. Dependability on that level is death, stifling, boring, repetition. What you need is dependability of the fact that divine is ever extending, ever moving. Life itself is ever moving through you constantly. That's the kind of dependability you're really looking for. And you've confused it. If I said to you all, whatever you are today, you will be this way for 20 years, what would you do? Would you rejoice? This is your destiny for 20 years. I will freeze it for you. Is not that hell? Never changing? Never moving? Nothing, all the same. And yet, you go to such extremes to concretize your world. I'm simply trying to awaken you to your own double bind. But on the one hand, you say, I don't want to stay like this, and I don't want... But then you say, oh, wait a minute. I don't want to stay like this, but it certainly would be nice if all those things around me that I like would stay the way they are. Just long enough to make me courageous enough so that I find something else that I like even better, then it can change. But please, don't leave the way you are until I have moved to a place where I feel secure. Don't you understand? Security underlies so much of what you do. Financial security, emotional security, sexual security. Look at it. Look at the securities that you are impinging upon yourselves upon. That's all you want. You want all these securities. You want it all laid out very carefully. Some of you have some kind of desires, others, others. You're only looking for security. If nothing else, security of peace so that you can get on with what you want to do. I want a peaceful existence so I can get along with my business. Security, my friend. Some of you need emotional security, financial security, sexual security, whatever. Material security, although I don't really feel that's as prevalent as some people think. I don't feel this. Look to yourselves. What is it that you hang on to? What is your security? What is the one thing that you say, let all else change, but oh, please, God, don't change this. What is it? Look at it carefully, because if you look very carefully at that thing which you are hanging on to with desperation, you'll begin to be vulnerable to it. And then we're back where we began. If you can hang on, look within your hands at what you're hanging on to. Look carefully. The watcher looks. What are you hanging on to? What is it you need? What is it you're afraid of losing? Deeply. What is it? And as you look, you will notice it is not a constant. It is an ever-moving continuum. And it's already gone. And you're doing just fine without it. You see yourselves as continually the same, and those around you as continually the same, and you are not. And the wonder of freedom is that you rejoice in the changes. You rejoice as each moment the new comes. Ever new joy. Ever new. There is no old. There's only new. Alive. Sparkling. Fascinating. Nothing to fear. All to accept and wondrously embrace. Fascinating. But you cannot experience that until fear is gone. And fear centers around some pole. Please, God, don't take this away. What is it? Is it your mind? Is it your intelligence? What is it? Look. All of it will die. Why not look at it now? We've gone on quite a long time, haven't we?
Not long enough.
Is there another question about the watcher that would be appropriate this time?
Well, I have a question. How can I become free if I don't exist?
You already are free. Because you don't exist, in the limited sense. You already are free. I keep telling you. You are already free. You are already free. Have I scrambled your brain sufficiently? Have you all become sufficiently confused? I hope so. I wish to scramble your brains. I wish to take your logic and scramble it around so that you look at it and it becomes impossible to untangle. If I have done that, we have achieved something this morning. Scrambled. That's what I want from you all. I want to scramble all of your ready-made responses, your ready-made book learning. I want to scramble it all. Because it's all paradoxical. He says, how can I be free? The answer is, he is free. The answer, the question is, who is inside? The answer is, no one is inside. If these have not presented you something to dwell upon this day, then we have failed. If you walk out of here and do not question again what I have said, then we have failed. You do not exist. The you that you count on does not exist. It does not exist. Once you begin to really believe that, then who is there to be hurt? Who is there to worry about past? Who is there to worry about future? There's nobody home. And yet at the same time that I say there's nobody home, what should be happening in each one of these so-called separated entities should rise up the feeling, but wait, something is here. And I say, oh yes, something is here. But it isn't what you think is here. And that is all that we can talk about. Something is here. Can you feel it? You know you're here. You know you're not up there. You're here. Well, who's here? Who is here? Not the conglomerate that you think. Something quite different. Because that conglomerate has changed fantastically since you walked in this door. And yet you, the I of you, remains. If change has taken place and the I is the same, then what are we talking about? Something continuously is present and it does not change. It is the same now and it will be the same eons from now. What is that? That is what I'm talking about. The personality as you know it does not exist. If it does not exist, then where is the fear? Then what are you protecting? What are you protecting if it isn't there? If nobody's home, what are you protecting? What are you defending? What are you worried about? You don't know what you are. Therefore, you are afraid. So we're back to where we began. The road to freedom lies movement within. You will never find out who you are out there, but you will find out who you are when you go within. As many moments of your day, I hope you are nauseously familiar with this statement, as many moments of your day and night as you possibly can, get within your being in whatever way is meaningful and watch and listen and observe. Stay there long enough, and you will find out who you are. And when you find out, you will be free. And it's very simple. There's nothing complicated about it.
I see this as this being part of these wave bands of energy.
That's true.
So, therefore, everything that we need flows along with us in the same way.
Of course, my friend. That's right. You see, everything that you need, you are. I repeat, everything that you need, you are. You are divine. But you don't know that. Well,
you just said
the you that you have identified with does not know that. And so when you say that you know it, if you mean that the essence participates in that knowledge, that's truth. But this is why an enlightened one never says, I know. Do you see?
I never get away with any of those great observations.
I'm sorry. But an enlightened one could never say, I know. Because there's no I and there's no knowing. There's simply, well, find out what there is. So, we've gone on long enough, I feel. Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
And good luck. And I repeat, if you walk out of this door and nothing I said grabs you for the rest of the day, our combined energies have failed. You are not who you think you are. You are not what you think you are. There's nobody home. Goodbye.
Thank you, Ruth.